Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm Darren McBreen. It is the 12th day of September 2012. Here's a quick look at what we have lined up for you this evening.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, Linda West speaks with Natural Society writer Anthony Gucciardi about the demonization of organic foods by the media. Plus, an in-depth analysis on the circumstances surrounding the death of the American ambassador and his staff in Libya. Then, Congress applies pressure to the TSA. Will it be forceful enough to restore our violated rights? All that and more on the InfoWars Nightly News.
And we begin this evening with the attack by Muslim extremists in Libya, where members of Al-Qaeda have murdered the U.S. ambassador and his staff as they tried to escape the embassy. The U.S. ambassador to Libya, Christopher Stevens, and his staff were killed during a violent protest and attack on the consulate. This is what happens when you put Al-Qaeda in charge. As we have reported that during the orchestrated overthrow of Libya, the so-called rebels supported by the United States and NATO consisted largely of Al-Qaeda jihadists, Al-Qaeda. In fact, the leader of the Libyan rebels trained with Osama bin Laden. His name is Abdel Hakim al-Hassadi, and he trained with Osama. And it's that the rebel fighters are indeed linked to Al-Qaeda. So the CIA's ruling elite for the future so-called democratic governance of Libya is run by a bunch of criminals and fanatics and heavily embedded Al-Qaeda forces. And we're not talking about a small group of Al-Qaeda members. No, we're talking about a large militant army here. All right. So the U.S. and NATO-backed terrorists have completely destabilized the country. It's now run by a criminal syndicate. This is by design. It appears to be the goal of U.S. policy. And Reuters is reporting that the Obama administration has funded the Libyan insurgency. So they basically have funded Al-Qaeda with weapons and training. But, of course, they fail to note the Al-Qaeda connection. Now, initial reports from the mainstream media say that the U.S. ambassador, Chris Stevens, was killed by a mortar attack. They said someone launched a rocket, a mortar hit his vehicle as he was trying to escape the embassy, and him and his staff members were killed in that attack. However, photos have surfaced that indicate the ambassador was killed by an angry lynch mob. Some very graphic photos here that show how, well, Stephen's body's being paraded around by a mob, and that's no mortar attack. He was physically attacked. You could tell right there, that guy was tortured to death. And this is what happens, like I said, when you put Al-Qaeda in charge. This is the disastrous consequence of the Obama administration's intervention in Libya, arming some of the very same men who carried out today's attack. This is a perfect example of the military-industrial complex humanitarian intervention, if you will. It's a total scam. And, this is the same thing. You could bet they're about to do the same thing in Syria. So there you have it. Has nothing to do with humanitarianism. This has everything to do with the grand chessboard. This only results in more bloodshed and instability of the entire region. And there is also riots going on right now outside of the U.S. Embassy in Cairo. So who knows what's next? But rest assured, the InfoWars team will continue to bring you the latest developments and breaking news as it happens. How would you rate the TSA? Do you think they are doing an excellent job in airport security? Or do you think that they are doing a horrible job? Well, I know what the InfoWars audience thinks, but I wonder what the average business traveler thinks of the TSA's performance. I mean, it can't be all that good, right? According to a recent survey, 90% of frequent flyers have concluded that survey says they didn't do a very good job. They said the TSA is doing a poor job or just a fair job in airport screening. There's the chart right there. And only 1.2% said the TSA is doing an excellent job. In fact, less than 5% said that the agency is even effective at all. No big surprise there. I guess the big surprise is why there's not hundreds of thousands of people rushing the White House right now and protesting the TSA and demanding that they take their hands out of our pants. It's always a mystery to me why there's not a nationwide protest to completely abolish the TSA. But land of the coward, home of the slave, I guess. But we did learn last week that the TSA finally released the stockpiles of complaints that they received from angry travelers who were extremely upset over the aggressive pat-downs and groping. Hundreds and hundreds of complaints that were only released following a Freedom of Information Act request. And that took like 4 years for the TSA to finally release the documents. Hell, the ACLU even says it receives almost 1,000 complaints every month from people who are fed up and tired of the TSA. And, and have you seen where they now stop people and test their drinks for explosives? I mean, it's getting completely out of control. That's right. After you go through the, either you're going through the naked x-ray body scanner, or maybe you went through the grope down, but you've already passed through security, and now they are demanding that, that they test your drinks. They approach the passengers and they want to test your drinks, and there's a look right there. So simply out of control. They also have a new policy ordering travelers to freeze on command. You have to stop what you're doing. They yell freeze. This is when you're in the security checkpoint line. They could tell you to freeze and you're expected to stop what you're doing and comply. I mean, do you honestly think that any of this is for your safety? Of course not. This is about conditioning. They are preparing the population for the police state. This is a PSYOP obedience training program. That's exactly what this is. And, even the TSA workers, they know that they're not there to make us safe. I mean, they might be too stupid to understand that they're part of a public obedience training program, but they do know, and they'll even admit, that they aren't keeping us any safer in our travels. And we showed you a video last week where a woman was kicked off of her flight in Houston for having a bad attitude. And that's because she was upset about being harassed as the TSA demanded that they test her drink for explosives. She captured the incident on her cell phone and asked the TSA agent if she was being kicked off the plane for, you know, was this for the safety of the passengers, she asked, or was it in retaliation for her attitude toward them? And the TSA agent on camera admitted it had nothing to do with safety, that they didn't like her attitude. So, you know, she did not submit to the Gestapo-like tactics, and she was kicked off her flight. So, and we're going to take a look at some of the headlines. That these are the types of headlines we've learned to expect every single day from the TSA. Woman escorted off U.S. Airways flight for snapping a photo. TSA forces woman to use naked body scanner 3 times because of her cute figure. TSA screener accused of stealing from handicapped woman. And video, woman sobs during a TSA grope down. And that's because women who are victims of sexual assault are naturally traumatized by grope downs. I mean, what the hell did they expect? Well, I guess we can expect the TSA is going to expand their operations because they've announced that they're going to do exactly that. They, in fact, they're already doing that. They are expanding to not only include airports, but they will now, their Viper program will now include train stations, bus terminals, and even roadside checkpoints of commercial vehicles. That's right. So they are indeed expanding. Meanwhile, there is finally some opposition to the TSA from all places, from Congress, if you could believe that, as a new House report has slammed the agency for failing to meet taxpayers' expectations. Yeah, you think? And the report even concedes that the agency's insensitivity and obsession with defending unpopular airport screening procedures is impeding security. Wow. Well, good for them. And it goes on to say that they recommend an independent analysis, an independent study, that is, outside of the TSA, finally. And this, of course, to check the for health risk of radiation-firing body scanners. And they suggest that they install privacy filters on all devices. So the bottom line, it is time to reform the TSA. It's my opinion that we totally abolish the TSA, but will Homeland Security, will they pay any attention to the House committee recommendations? I think they're going to pretend like they never even saw the report, like the report doesn't even exist. That's just my opinion. I think it's going to be business as usual for the TSA Gestapo. I hope I'm wrong, but I guess time will tell. I hope I'm wrong. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Now, you know, it's a fact that in communist China, you're only allowed to have one child. I mean, they have a forced abortion policy that is all too real. And it is now being reported that the employees at Apple Corporation factories in China are required to have routine pregnancy tests, once a month, in fact. And this to ensure China's one-child policy, a massive crime against women and unborn babies. Here's David Ortiz with more.
Thank you, Darren. Dave Ortiz for InfoWars Nightly News. Apple Corporation may be an American success story, but is there a possibility that they're unintentionally participating in a depopulation program? According to LifeSite News, a report released today by LifeSite News, there are congressional hearings that have recently taken place in Washington that focus on human rights violations that are taking place in China. And some of the people who have been participating in that include former Apple employees that worked at some of their plants in China. According to one of the people who testified at the hearings, by order of the factory's Family Planning Commission, every month during their menstrual period, women had to undress in front of the birth planning doctor for examination. If anyone skipped the examination, she would be forced to take a pregnancy test at the hospital. We were allowed to collect a salary only after it was confirmed that we were not pregnant. When discovered, pregnant women would be dragged to undergo forced abortions. There simply was no other choice. Now, we're obviously not saying that Apple conducted these tests, but what we are saying is that there are several things that could have happened. Number one is Apple simply doesn't know that this is going on, and they need to be made aware of it. Another option is they're aware that this is going on, but they have dismissed it. And obviously the third possibility is that they know full well what's going on, and on some perverted level, they endorse it. It's very well known that the elitists globally, both overseas and the United States, want to depopulate the public. If you don't believe that that is the case, and if you think that elites here in the United States don't want to depopulate and that it's all in my imagination, there are people on record who have voiced their support for depopulation, and the reason for this is that the elite cannot control the masses. They cannot control a population of 7, 8, 9 billion people, but they can control a population of 500 million to 3 billion people. Here's Ted Turner, an American entrepreneur, voicing his support for depopulation.
First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, health care, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Mr. Turner, I was wondering if you think it's a good idea to reduce 90% of the population because we are being overpopulated by a lot of...
90%.
80? Prince Philip said 80, sir. I go with 85.
I think 2 billion is about right.
Right, me too. Thank you.
So there you go. Ted Turner loves you. And Bill Gates has also been on record. We showed a video yesterday where Bill Gates is also talking about depopulation and how he's doing it for your good, how he's lobbying for this for your good. According to the congressional meetings that also took place, the report that came out today also points out a USA Today article that talked about forced abortions that are taking place in China. The July USA Today reported that a baby was killed in the town of Meshan, Shandong province. The parents already had one child, so population control officials tracked them down and injected the mother, who was 9 months pregnant, with an abortion-inducing drug. The baby was pulled out of the mother like a piece of meat, the story said. The baby was crying when authorities shoved it into a bucket to die. Now, obviously, people hearing that right now want to, throw their pen at their laptop, because that's obviously disgusting. But that's what the elites want to do. They ultimately want to depopulate the population. So Apple has a lot of explaining to do. Again, they may not know what's going on, but they may. They've got some explaining to do. And this comes on the heels of other stories which show that Apple has had to put suicide nets outside of many factories in China, because many people have committed suicide. Many people have reported that they've had to work 24-hour shifts. There's also reports that the managers tell the employees, either you work hard today or you work hard tomorrow looking for another job. Now, we're capitalists here. We're free market people. We believe that the free market is compassionate. But we don't think any company should be taking advantage of the poverty that is occurring in other countries to benefit themselves and to get their CEOs $5, $10 million bonuses. So, Apple, you're on notice. And speaking of tyranny, in Bristol Borough, that's a town in Pennsylvania, there is a vote coming up that will encourage people to put a camera in front of an abandoned warehouse. And the camera will not only be placed to view the abandoned warehouse, but it will also be aired on public access television, so that if members of the public see something, they can snitch on the person who's committing a crime. Now, some people watching this may say, well, David, if we catch somebody committing a crime, what's so bad with that? Well, obviously, this is just conditioning. It's not going to end at that. This is all part of the surveillance state. And this is going to continue to grow. So they're voting to see if they can also air what the camera shows on public access television. They want to create a snitching state. And according to the article, if the proposal is passed, residents can keep an eye on the building via the web or the local government access channel. So that is obviously horrible. It's all part of the surveillance state. And if you don't think that can happen here in the United States, you're wrong. If that bill passes, it's going to spread like wildfire throughout the country. And as recently as 6 years ago, the chief of police in Houston stated that he wanted to put cameras inside of people's homes. His rationale was, we keep on getting 911 calls from certain homes, so we need to find out what's going on in there. What's going on in there? He actually proposed this. So the police state is growing, and InfoWars is obviously always on the cutting edge. 3 years ago, Paul Joseph Watson wrote an article titled UK Government to Install Surveillance Cameras in Private Homes. According to the article, the UK government is about to spend, obviously by now they've already spent, $700 million installing surveillance cameras inside the private homes of citizens to ensure that children go to bed on time, attend school, and eat proper meals. That program is already going on in Europe right now, and about 20,000 plus families are participating. They love the tyranny. They think it's great. And if you don't think, their justification for it is, this is only for wayward children. If your kid is a troublemaker, if your kid is not going to school, then we need to know what the heck is going on. And this is already occurring. If you don't think this could occur in the United States, you're sadly mistaken, because one of the reasons why New York is such a surveillance state now is because Mayor Michael Bloomberg continues to tell his council that London is doing it. Look, London has a surveillance state. Why can't we? So this, sadly, in time, unless patriots rise, will be occurring here in the United States. And if that doesn't make your blood boil, we're going to go to a story right now with Ja'Kari Jackson, in which he focuses on a new program that the Austin Police Department has started, in which they're pulling people over and demanding that they take blood tests if they feel they are driving under the influence. A complete violation of our Fourth Amendment, but the Austin Police Department can care less. Ja'Kari Jackson, over to you.
The city of Austin hosts no refusal DWI weekends. No refusal meaning that the driver can have their blood drawn even if the suspect refuses the blood draw and or the breath test. Now, while we recognize driving while intoxicated as a very serious offense, is it serious enough to have your rights and privacy violated? Police are doing no refusal DUI weekends where they can draw your blood without your approval. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I don't have any problem with that.
I think that's really unsafe. A lot of people faint when they have their blood drawn, and it doesn't make it any safer for them to be driving.
What are your thoughts on them, you know, being able to acquire a warrant to draw your blood even if you refuse?
I don't know. They shouldn't allow that.
I kind of feel that's a little invasive and kind of, I don't know, the lack of communication between them and the community is kind of stupid.
I think even if I'm completely sober, hadn't had a drink all night, I'd still rather go to jail for the night.
Really?
Yeah.
Why so?
I don't think it's fair.
Do you think they could do anything besides blood draws and breathalyzers to, you know, keep the auto accidents down?
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes?
To keep us safe and to keep everybody else safe.
I think just installing checkpoints and doing breathalyzers of suspected drunk drivers would be a good way.
To limit the number of DUI accidents, I don't know. I'm not sure what they can do, really. It's up to the people, you know.
I think the streets of Austin are safe as they are.
Even from drunk drivers?
There's no drunk drivers. Everyone drives a cab nowadays, I think. Right? Yes. Right.
Do you think texting is more or less dangerous than drinking and driving?
Maybe equally.
Anything that's going to take their sound judgment, then it's better to ban it.
You've seen people text and drive, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that's more or less dangerous than drinking and driving?
It's probably more dangerous, I would think, you know.
I feel like anyone can be distracted by really anything that they do while driving, and taking texting away is just stupid. I mean, you can be talking and still get into an accident. It's not necessarily about what you're doing. It's about the driver and how responsible they are.
Have you ever texted while you're driving?
Always. I try and do it at red lights.
The National Highway and Safety Administration released that in 2010, 10,000 people died as a result of alcohol-related incidents. Very serious numbers. But if you take a look at textinganddrivingsafety.com's post, they found that texting and driving is 6 times more dangerous than drinking and driving. Also, that texting and driving mirrors the effects of driving after having 4 beers. Once again, we do not in any way encourage you to drink and drive. We are simply pointing out that texting and driving is more dangerous. I'm here with
Commander Jason Dustroff of the Highway Enforcement Unit.
All right, so I want to ask you a few questions about the no-refusal DUI weekends. First of all, how long have you been doing them?
We've been doing them over 3 years in our department.
All right, and how did they get started? Was there any particular reason or need for them?
Chief Acevedo came in and really saw the need that we need to hold more drivers that are out there driving impaired, and especially the ones that are killing and injuring people, accountable.
Now, are there any plans to make these no-refusal weekends permanent or to expand them to other, you know, maybe not holidays, just kind of every weekend? Is there any plans to do anything like that?
I know a lot of cities, like I explained earlier, are moving towards no-refusal 365 days of the year, all the time, 24 hours. That's something we're always going to keep in our bag and look at it individually and say, is it right for Austin?
Is there any type of violation of the Fourth Amendment right to be, you know, secure in your person, in your opinion?
No, not at all. This has been upheld throughout the United States, that it's within the constitutional rights for us to take that blood.
Recently, the city of Austin was in the news for, you know, having people infiltrate the Occupy movement last December. Protesters were at the port of Houston, and they say that officers were involved in allowing them, you know, assisting them block the Houston port. Do you have any comment on that?
I don't. I really don't have any information on that.
All right, just one final question, sir. Now, we had a chance to speak to some people on the street just a few minutes ago, and one of the questions we asked them is, when you're driving and you look in your rearview mirror and you see a police officer, do you feel safe or do you feel threatened? We talked about 7 to 8 people, and the majority of them said that they feel threatened. When you see a cop car and you're driving and you see a cop car behind you, you know, do you feel more safe or less safe?
I feel less safe.
I feel fine. I'm just, at that point, worried about if I have, like, a taillight out or something.
I think the police have... They're not like they used to be.
I feel very scared, always. Even when I'm not drinking, even when I'm just going to the store, I feel threatened all the time. So I don't
threatened by who?
Just the cops. I feel like they're going to pull me over for anything.
It all depends, because they like to harass. You know what I mean?
When I see the policeman, I don't have any, no, nothing to hide. So they are my friends now.
Now, to clarify, you're saying you feel unsafe because of the police or just unsafe in general?
unsafe because of the police.
Do you have any idea of why that may be?
Well, I think most of the time people see those lights behind them is the first thing they think is, was I speeding? You know, did I not obey the law? What did I do? So typically, you know, that's a normal feeling. But I think once they meet the officer and they're able to go, okay, you know, I was just going a few miles an hour over the speed limit or my tail light's out or something like that, 99.9 of our citizens are doing nothing wrong other than a minor traffic violation.
Now, over the weekend, over 90 people were arrested for the no refusal DUI clause. About half of those gave both breath and blood samples, but not all of those were voluntary. Now, we had a chance to speak to a couple officers off the record. They told us that the blood draws are not automatic and they do need a judge's approval to do them. This is Jakari Jackson reporting for the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, Jakari, thank you so much for that powerful piece. And if you notice, someone in the piece said something that many people say, and that's, what do you have to hide? What do you have to hide? You know, let the government, you know, monitor you. You don't have anything to hide, do you? The power of words. It's amazing how the power of words allows tyrants to run free. Now, I'm not demonizing that individual specifically. It's that mindset of what do you have to hide? And let's see what a patriot had to say about the power of words. This is Samuel Adams. How strangely will the tools of a tyrant pervert the plain meaning of words? That's according to Samuel Adams. And we're going to go now to a story, to an interview conducted by Linda West. She interviewed Anthony Gucciardi of Natural Society, and they're going to talk about how the mainstream media is demonizing organic foods. Stay tuned.
Alex Jones here with a message to fellow freedom lovers. The prognosis for the entire planetary economic system runs from bad to worse. The globalist model is to shut down societies and starve patriots out until they acquiesce to the global takeover. That's why we've assembled the most vital and important preparedness items at InfoWarsShop.com. These are items that I did research on, that I personally use. We've got the Life Straw, so you can turn fetid water into safe water anywhere you go. The KTOR hand crank generator to charge up key equipment during power outages or out in the field. Strategic Relocation, 3rd edition by Joel Skousen. When Disaster Strikes by Matthew Stein. TheraSafe, used by Homeland Security to protect yourself during any radiological event. Hand crank shortwave AM/FM radios. Everything that we've researched and found to be the best is available at InfoWarsShop.com, and your purchase makes our InfoWar possible. We're getting prepared. Are you? InfoWarsShop.com. Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure, and it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
Welcome back. The latest health news blasting across mainstream media is claiming that organic food is actually no healthier than conventional food. Okay, well, that's completely ridiculous. And tonight our guest is going to talk with us about that. And in fact, he says it's being perpetuated by what he calls corporate science whores. Tonight we have Anthony Gucciardi. He's a GMO researcher and InfoWars contributor, and he's also the co-founder of Natural Society. Welcome, Anthony.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So where shall we start with this? Why don't we begin on why it's absolutely ridiculous to claim that organic food is not healthier than conventional food.
Well, there's many facets to this, but to get started, we can look really at the study itself and how it contradicts itself. Because the study really is being shown as mainstream media as really the anti-organic study, and it shows that organic is so bad. But when you really look at the facts, actually the study itself shows that organic is healthier and has less pesticide residue, antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And then we can get into also how it doesn't look at key factors, is completely funded by Monsanto-linked organizations and individuals. So, but first, it's important to understand, the study actually says specifically that organic food has lower levels of pesticide, insecticide, and herbicide residue. In other words, it has less Roundup, it has different forms of it as well. They even fail to say that conventional food generally uses what's known as Roundup, and it's Monsanto's best-selling herbicide, and that has been linked to DNA damage, cancer, infertility, and so on. But then they say that it's okay because it doesn't reach the legal limit of pesticide, herbicide, insecticide use, which is set by the EPA and was absolutely ridiculous. It's kind of like when they say it's safe limits of fluoride or radiation or anything that. You know, Fukushima, for example.
Absolutely.
So they're actually saying inside the study that, yeah, organic food has less pesticide levels, herbicides, etc., but it doesn't matter because it doesn't extend beyond the limit of EPA. So it's a blatant contradiction. And then it goes into the antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which I know you want to talk about as well.
Right. And what really struck me about it was that this whole claim that came out is, it's no better than normal foods, is just like Mike Taylor's excuse for not labeling GMOs in the first place by claiming that GMO foods, which are made in a lab, are no different than natural foods that grow out of the ground, so we don't have to label them, which is why even today they're not labeled, and we've got things like Prop 37 in California where people are fighting Monsanto corporate people trying to get this just labeled so people have a choice.
Well, you notice this comes out right when the heated debate of Prop 37 is really sparking up right now. And they don't even mention GMO foods. I know we're going to discuss that in depth, but they don't even talk about it. They don't even say, there's GMO foods and conventional. They just pretend. They like to minify the argument here. Just like Michelle Obama's healthy food guide. It doesn't talk about GMOs or anything. Just
right.
Personally. But they don't even want to talk about GMOs. They want to pretend it doesn't exist so that people subconsciously, when they go to the supermarket, okay, they see something that's conventional and that it might have a ton of GMOs in it, but they think, you know, I heard on the news that genetically modified food is the same as organic or whatever, because they don't consciously think about it. They just say, oh, there was a study that said conventional is the same as organic, so this must be the same. But they don't look at any of the key factors, and there's a bunch we can talk about. You know, GMOs, they don't look at. They don't look at high fructose corn syrup, which has mercury in it, admitted by the Washington Post, and anyone can Google that, of course. They don't look at BPA content. They don't look at artificial sweeteners, a brand new study out just recently. Aspartame destroys your immune system, causes golf ball-sized tumors in rats, particularly females, brain tumors. They don't talk about any of that. They just say, it had less pesticides, less antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So the study really shows that organic food is better. But then we have ties to these statistical liars, and as you mentioned, corporate whores, essentially, that spin it using an algorithm we're going to talk about to basically make it look like organic food is worse. It's truly amazing.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait to get into that, because the people behind that you and Mike Adams did that article on, that are behind the Stanford research that they put out, it's such a joke. I can't wait to talk about that, but I just want to make sure we cover this, because most of the time when people go into stores and they're looking at the food, and maybe you can tell me this, I know that I pick organic foods expressly because it's my only certainty that they're not GMO foods. And since more and more foods that are showing up in supermarkets are GMO foods and that they're not labeled, how much of a percentage do you think are actually GMOs?
Of conventional? I mean, we know.
Of conventional,
actually.
Yeah.
The soybeans are upward of 96 to 99%. I know some people are saying it's 100% of all conventional soybeans now because of the contamination factor. Basically, when Monsanto goes ahead and gives you seeds and you plant them, they can go in the wind and contaminate other farms. And then they basically sue you for having their patented genes inside your farm. And that's how they shut down small farming institutions. But, I mean, it's upwards of 96 to 99% soybeans. Corn, we're looking at 93 to 96. Cotton, upwards of the same numbers. It's all 90-plus percent, right, pretty much across the board with all the main crops. And you look, those are the crops, by the way, the government pays you to grow. So they're paying them to grow high-fructose corn syrup, basically, through the corn, genetic-modified corn, and then they throw it in these bats and make high-fructose corn syrup, which has mercury in it, and it's genetically modified. And then there's all these studies saying it causes obesity and cancer, and people are like, well, it's just corn. It's the same as sugar. But they have no idea what they're even talking about. Same with aspartame, made using genetically modified bacterial waste. Literal fecal matter of the bacteria is modified. And that's from 1999, article in Independent. It says, we take the gene, this is like a Monsanto, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it right in front of me, I just memorized these. And he talks about taking the fecal matter gene and manipulating it to create aspartame, a really delicious sweetener made from modified fecal matter.
Yeah, it'd be hard to sell that one on the label, huh? Yeah, you don't see that on there. It's always like a pretty little pink package, like, put me in, it's all fine. And it also reminds me of those ads that they've been running a lot on TV, trying to promote high fructose corn syrup. Oh, it's just sugar. It's just
the
natural sugar.
Association.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. And also, we were talking about that because of the cross pollination going on, that so many of our natural crops are polluted with GMOs, so they're not even pure now, and that a lot of countries won't even take our food because it does have GMO in it. So there's so many more foods that we don't even know or think of. I mean, obviously soy and corn, they're high on the list, some wheat and things like that. But the pesticides, as you said, that's another thing. And the mercury in, now what is, you know, we always hear that mercury is horrible for our body, and what are some of the things that mercury can cause to happen in your body?
Completely devastate your immune system, build up in your organs, build up in your brain. I mean, it's in thimerosal as well in the vaccinations. And just to jump back for 2 seconds about the contamination, about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, maybe on the nightly news, I was on with Mike Adams, and we broke that exclusive document that showed Monsanto actually planted genetically modified alfalfa before the USDA even approved it, and nobody knew about it. That's from a whistleblower. And basically what's happening is the alfalfa was being found in organic seed bounties. So they'd have big, basically, cans of organic seeds, and they'd test it, and they'd find genetically modified alfalfa. And they would report it to the USDA, and the USDA did not even respond to them. So that's what's happening right now. Monsanto is literally trying to even modify the organic. Now, that's not to say that all organic's modified is not, but they're trying, and they're being stopped, fortunately. So it's always best idea to buy organic, and that's why this study is so damaging, because everyone's going to be buying GMOs now and just destroying their body. And like you said, it has mercury, and mercury is one of the most toxic element compounds that we're even aware of on the entire Earth.
Wow. Wow. And sending it to the USDA or the FDA and expecting them to actually be taking care of our health is such a joke, as we know, since Monsanto's ex-lawyer, Mike Taylor, went over to be the head of the FDA, and now Obama's made him our food czar, and he's just a total Monsanto GMO man. So who's looking after our food? Absolutely not the USDA. No wonder they didn't get back to you. That's right, us.
Yeah.
And wonderful people like you.
Thank you. You too. But it probably wouldn't surprise you then to know that there's also a Monsanto board member directly linked to the study funding the whole entire operation wing of Stanford University as well.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to get into that too, because you also, I love this, you linked this, the same people that did this study, to people that had worked with trying to make tobacco, okay? For instance, one of the articles that were published, and this is recently, the case against tobacco is not closed. Why smoking may not be dangerous to your health. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, now tell us how they're linked and what you and Mike Adams, who is also a contributor here at InfoWars, and he's with Natural News, tell us about what you discovered when you looked into this.
Yeah, so me and Mike Adams were both really concerned about this study. And I had done some research, and Mike Adams, it's on naturalnews.com as well. We went in, we researched this took me, you know, literally about 12 hours of sitting down and researching the deep connections. And it's super complicated, and it's a pretty long article as well. I would encourage you to actually go read it. But to sum it up here, basically the co-author of the study, Dr. Ingram Olkin, okay, he is at one point, or currently really, the head chairman of Stanford's Department of Statistics, okay? And this is a guy who was funded by the Council of Tobacco Research, which was an organization that was trying to show that cigarette smoking was perfectly harmless. In fact, they were trying to show it had some benefits, actually, that smoking, you know, radioactive cigarettes with a bazillion fillers in it is actually perfectly safe for your health. And an organization started this heart study, okay, and they brought it to the court, basically, and said that cigarettes were bad for your heart. And Ingram was instrumental, showed that cigarettes were bad for your heart and your whole entire body. So what he did was he made up this algorithm, a statistical algorithm. It's called Multivariate Statistical Algorithm, known as Dr. Ingram Olkin's Multivariate Logistic Risk Function. I believe I'm saying that right. Anyway, so this algorithm essentially can be used to lie with statistics. That's a quote from a book here, written by one of the individuals who's very closely associated with it. The research ultimately became known as such, and it was a key component in Big Tobacco's use of anti-science to attack whistleblowers and attempt to claim cigarettes were perfectly safe and even may have had some health benefits. And then, of course, this was all done at Stanford with Dr. Ingram here. The research originated at Stanford, where Ingram headed the Department of Statistics and ultimately supported the science front to reject any notion that cigarettes might harm human health. Then, of course, he wrote this great article, or he was instrumental in it, "The Case Against Tobacco is Not Closed, Why Smoking May Not Be Dangerous to Your Health." And then you can even look up Council of Tobacco Research, look it up on Wikipedia, and it plainly states that the Council of Tobacco Research, known as the CTR, has been known to pay off publications and journalists with more than $500,000, and after you adjust for inflation, that is $3 million today, as far back as 1968, in order to generate pro-smoking propaganda. So this is a guy that has a history of joining up with corrupt organizations, massive multi-million, billion-dollar organizations, and lying using his personal algorithm to show that certain things aren't dangerous and to basically bring it back into the spotlight as perfectly fine. So if you can't draw the comparison between smoking, not smoking, you know, eating pesticides that lower your IQ with Roundup, DNA damage, et cetera, and GMOs and not, I mean, it's a clear indication. And Stanford's kept this guy on. He's honored. He's the head of the department. They've kept him on, even though it's known that he got paid to do this.
This is so ridiculous to me. Like, he just makes up some random science and then throws it out there, and it's like, oh, it's mathematically based, so it's all acceptable. And it reminds me of, like, when they were trying to promote tobacco and they'd put all the movie stars with cigarettes and be like, oh, it's cool, it's so cool to be smoking cigarettes. Just like they trying to perpetuate with GMOs, like, oh, GMO foods will stop world hunger, or it'll stop starvation, or it'll help the poor farmers. And it's all just a big lie. It's just a big lie to get us to buy these horrible products. And now he's backing up with this junk science.
Yeah, and speaking of the farmers and everything like that, I can't remember if it's 100 or 1,000 every couple hours or so, but hundreds of thousands of farmers have actually committed suicide, particularly in India, because Monsanto goes and sells them their GMO seeds, and they say you'll increase yields, you'll feed your family more efficiently, and they go ahead and the yields are actually reduced. And that's been confirmed in the largest study. Bill Gates went out and said that GMO is the only way to fight hunger. And I went ahead and wrote an article basically explaining all the studies that by even the UN, actually the UN did the largest study and showed that GMOs cannot fight world hunger, period. There's no exception. They cannot fight it. And they determined the only way would be sustainable and organic farming.
UN?
The UN. The UN, believe it or not.
Okay, that's really interesting. Okay, that's really interesting. I wouldn't have thought that would come out from them.
I know. But you have to also remember one important thing here. This isn't an accident by this guy. This is a literal way to lie with statistics. He's not accidentally, you know, messing with some numbers by accident. Oh, it's just a funny study. It's not a fluke in the system. It's a way to lie with statistics. And this guy's like 80 or 90 years old. He's been doing this for a long time. And I think we need to look at all the research he's done, too. He's done probably hundreds or thousands of studies over the years. And they could all be very well paid off by organizations to reach a already predetermined conclusion.
Oh, absolutely. We ought to find out exactly what he has done, supposedly research and the studies he's come up with. But just to go back a little bit about the Indian farmers, because this really touches my heart, because it's just not India either, because Monsanto, as you mentioned, these, you know, GMO toxic plants will fly into their yard and pollute all these natural plants, and then Monsanto is suing them. Last I heard, he had hundreds and thousands of our small farmers in litigation right now, and he's just taking away their farms, And then in India, and it's very interesting because in India especially, where they have a long-term history, longer than ours almost, of the seed being sacred, where when a boy turns into a man, they shower him with seeds. When somebody dies, they throw seeds on the grave. And so the taking away of their seed collecting and forcing them to buy these GMO seeds was horrific enough. But then, as you said, they weren't growing, and now they're poor. They can't feed their families. They no longer have a biodiverse crop. They're only growing like cotton or coffee because they're trying to make money, and then it doesn't grow. And in fact, I did a story about this myself. It was so wonderful. One of the Indian farmers, actually, when the Monsanto rep came out, he was screaming at him and saying, look at this, it's not growing, you lied to us, it's not growing better, it's not growing at all, and beat the Monsanto rep up. And the agricultural head of India just kind of looked the other way, because these people are devastated by these lies that Monsanto has perpetuated, and it's just horrible. I think it's just horrible.
Oh, it is, and you have to look at the state of India. They just recently also took away a few billion dollars worth of food that was intended through their farming program for the poor villagers, like the dying, like they have nothing to eat. They eat, you know, 400 calories a day or something like that. They took billions of food, and the government said, we own it now, sorry. And you have to look at a country like that that's so corrupt, and look who's devastating everything. It's Monsanto going in there, destroying small farmers, government owning everything. I believe there was one official who went out and spoke out against it, and they were saying that they're afraid for their life, you know, bad things are happening, et cetera, et cetera. But also you have to consider, they're drinking the very same biopesticides that Monsanto has given them to kill themselves. That's really symbolic and depressing at the same time. They're drinking the same things that they were given to kill themselves. And it's because Monsanto's GMO crops will cause super weeds, super mutated insects. Right. They'll just absolutely devastate your farmland and destroy your yields. And, and also one important thing that we should probably talk about is the antibiotic-resistant bacteria that it's causing, and it could even kill the farmers themselves.
Yeah, let's talk about that, and also the fact that the plants, the way they stop, they have the Roundup already built into them. So when a bug bites the plant, it literally breaks open its stomach through the intestines. And now we're seeing, because it moves up the food chain, of course, right? It goes from the plants to the animals to us. And we're seeing this gut impermeability, I think is what they say, and all the things that is linked to. And they're even saying possibly autism may be linked to this. So can you talk a little more about the kind of things that we're seeing? You mentioned the white plague, this new resistant thing that's coming out. Tuberculosis, I think you said. Can you go into that?
Heavily resistant tuberculosis, yeah. But so the key here is that health starts in the gut. I mean, that's a pretty universally accepted fact right there. It starts in the gut to a pretty large extent. We've found now that mental illness is linked to gut health. So if you have an imbalance of bacteria in your gut, which is what GMO foods are really doing, they're going in and they're just essentially modifying your gut bacteria and system. So when you have too much bad bacteria, and that's bad bacteria meaning too much sugar or high fructose corn syrup or whatever, and it kills the probiotic bacteria, the good bacteria that you want in your stomach, and it overflows it with bad bacteria. And that's directly connected to your brain health. So you can actually be operating at a lower level than you should be if you have bad gut bacteria, and that's also links into autism. But it also links into schizophrenia and everything like that. They're finding now that if you just start supplementing with probiotics and do a really enhanced diet, you'll see amazing changes. And this all ties into the antibiotic-resistant bacteria, because if you have a poor immune system, you're not going to be able to fight off an antibiotic-resistant bug or strain. Right. And they're just blasting it with antibiotics and these super drugs that have side effects as long as a phone book, and it's still not doing anything. And that's what I'm talking about, the white plague, is this new antibiotic-resistant tuberculosis that's killing a lot of wealthy individuals. And it's also killing out of poor individuals, and that's rare. Usually a plague will, you know, particularly kill poor individuals who are malnourished. But it's such to the point now, with 70%+ of antibiotics estimated by some organizations used in livestock, that basically the livestock are so sick and they're eating these GMO foods and everything, the antibiotics are just getting so, the bacterial strains are getting so mutated that antibiotics aren't working. And they're going and infecting people, and they're just getting more and more transformed. And over time, what could happen, a sort of a timeline, is essentially, you think about it, this white plague spreads, okay?
Right.
And it starts infecting the malnourished first, and it kills them with a super high fatality rate, maybe in a third world nation or something, because they don't have a strong bolstered immune system. Then it'll spread, and it'll ultimately go to the wealthy, the middle class, because they're eating these GMO foods, conventional foods with no real serious nutrients because they're destroyed or outweighed by the pesticide, herbicide, insecticide contamination. And your immune system is completely crushed, the bad bacteria, eating a lot of processed sugars. It'll most likely have a higher fatality rate with them as well. It'll just climb the food chain, essentially, of humans and kill them off. To an extent, and I'm not saying this is absolutely going to happen, but this is really what would happen if the white plague or whatever kept developing and got further out. But there is something you can do about it. Everyone should have some high-quality oregano oil, for number one, to help fight it. Everyone should be having some colloidal silver, some low parts per million colloidal silver. If you just start bolstering your immune system, you can fight these things off without antibiotics to begin with, because the antibiotics are worthless. It's now coming down to, and a lot of scientists are realizing this, we need to start using things like garlic to fight these off, because it's actually working. And there's research by PubMed, peer-reviewed, that shows garlic can kill antibiotic-resistant bacteria strains and viruses, whereas a lot of these antibiotics are doing virtually nothing. So when it comes down to it, they could also declare some type of pandemic or something like that and, you know, hype it all up and probably even go as far as to say they're going to make a vaccine for it, even though it's a bacteria. So it could get bad.
Wow, that so very interesting. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. In Jeffrey Smith's book, he wrote The Seeds of Deception, also Genetic Roulette. He's one of the top experts on GMOs. He was saying that one of the things that happens is that when the GMOs come in, because they've been spliced with different species that never occur, like a spider and a goat, that it's actually created a mystery organism that never existed on this planet. And we're putting it into our body, and they can't even classify it. It's not a bacteria. They don't even know what to do. And they, hence, have no idea what it's going to do in our body, or our body has no idea how to deal with it. And so that seems to be also something that might contribute to some type of plague that...
We're just starting to see some of the effects. Almost every show I've been on talk about GMOs. Someone calls in and says, I'm a farmer and I got brainwashed into feeding my livestock GMO crops, and they just start dropping dead. And you can look up Syngenta livestock dead GMO or something like that. Syngenta had these animals just dying on them, and they covered it up for a long time. So the short-term effects we pretty much know about, and it's hard because Monsanto doesn't let anyone research their crops and seeds. I mean, why would they?
Right.
So in a review of 18 studies, it was found that there was severe organ damage associated with GMO crops, eating GMO foods. But we don't know the long-term effects, really. I mean, it hasn't been that long, and all the scientists are saying that if anyone claims they know the long-term effects, they're lying. Like, point blank, they're just making it up. They have no idea. And it's likely that even the elite don't even know what it's going to do. It's all a huge experiment, really. And because when you switch one gene, you don't know what it's going to switch.
Right.
They don't even know. They don't even know what's happening when we eat it, really. I mean, we have some idea. It's messing with our genetics. It's messing with our bacteria. It's affecting our brain. It's affecting our brain health. It's causing us to be fat. But we don't know really what it's going to do in 20 years.
Absolutely. And as you said before, it's so corrupt. And the Monsanto, like, turning wheel of, you know, government Monsanto. So we really just don't know what's going to happen.
And you mess with the genes, I mean, it's going to affect your offspring as well. The genes are not something you really want to mess with at all. You don't want to mess with those because it can affect subsequent generations.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another thing I was reading by Jeffrey Smith. And he was saying that because part of what they do with the pesticides is to weaken the plant so that it'll die on its own, is that's why we're seeing these animals that are then getting, you know, they can't get nutrition into themselves, and so they get weak, and then there's a lot of infant deaths that they're saying. Now, they don't do the studies here, but overseas, oh, yeah, they're definitely linking. I mean, what do they say? If they put something by a chicken, one of these things that they've isolated, that if the chicken's pregnant, it'll literally abort the fetus in 24 hours. And lab rats, what they lose, all the mice die when they're fed GMOs. And now we're seeing over the last 10 years, the rate of infertility in humans has skyrocketed.
Time magazine article today, is it the end of humankind or something like that, you know, because everyone's going infertile, and there's charts that show basically the infertility of men is just skyrocketing massively, and there's all these joking articles, haha, is it the end of humans, you know, it's sick and disgusting, and they say it really playfully too, by the way. It's like, oh, is it the end of humans, is, you know, will nature finally flourish and everything. They really love it. But if you want to see a mainstream example of infant mortality and GMOs, look up Huffington Post, infant mortality, sterility, GMO, and you'll likely find the article, or at least another mainstream one, about how there's a study that showed that GMOs are linked to infant mortality and sterility, yet the USDA, FDA continues to do absolutely nothing.
Oh, it's just, to me, this single issue that we're talking about, our food source, it's, to me, the most important subject that's going on right now, because the fact is we all need food every day to eat and to live. And if you corrupt the food source, if you take over the food source, which is exactly what Monsanto and other large companies, Syngenta, is trying to do, then the people become powerless.
Yeah. And can I draw a parallel real quick?
Please.
We're talking about big tobacco. Now we're talking about big GMO. And guess what? The skeptics, the scientific skeptics, it's really fake baloney science, they would be saying that we're conspiracy theorists for saying that smoking is bad. You know that, because the government and the corporations were funding it back in the day, and they would have these science journals, and they would say, oh, smoking and cigarette smoke is actually good for you, it'll help your heart. Right now, that's the same thing. You write an article about GMOs, you get blasted in the comments by these probably paid off, I mean, these, you know, quote-unquote science worshippers that talk about all the scientific evidence is not there.
Right.
And it's all a joke. Just like DDT, big tobacco, it's played over and over again. They used to say radiation was really good for you. Over and over again, we're seeing the same things. Now the cell phone connection as well. But it's all really a game to these science skeptics, as they'll call it. And they're probably just paid off. I really doubt they even believe it. I really doubt a lot of them will eat GMOs. In fact, I have a personal example. I'm not going to give out a name, but I was on a program and he was blasting me. He was basically assaulting me for saying the GMOs were bad, et cetera. And after the show, he's like, oh yeah, I eat all organic. You know, it's just for the show. You know, you got to give people something.
Yeah, I think I read an article somewhere that the Monsanto employees won't even eat the GMO foods.
No.
But
and then they have Argentinian slave labor where they can only buy from the Monsanto store with their money, and if they leave, they don't get paid. This is not a corporation that cares. And as Alex always talks about, we're talking about a government that did radiation studies of tens of thousands of babies and basically killed them off. So why is it any different for the general public to be eating GMOs? It's not an organization that cares about you, period.
Well, yeah, and Monsanto also made Agent Orange that we sprayed all our troops with. So
hundreds of thousands of deaths and birth defects.
Right, and I don't think a lot of people realize that Monsanto was in the poison business, Roundup and Agent Orange, DDT, before he decided to get into the seed business. And how you marry poison and seed,
they're bringing back Agent Orange, too, in the crops as a form of a new GMO crop. They're going to use an Agent Orange compound in it.
Okay, so then, Anthony, What can we do about this? I don't want to just talk about what's going on and how horrible it is without giving people some solutions, some actions to take. And I know you have some recommendations. What can you tell people?
Yep. Well, me and Mike Adams in Natural News just started this petition on change.org. And I think it's really essential that we get 10,000 signatures at least on this. We already have 3,000 or something. We didn't ever really promote it that hard because a lot of people are passionate about this. And I would recommend everyone to go sign it. The really simple way to find it is either go to my site or Natural News, either one. But the other way is tinyurl.com/organicpetition. And that's tinyurl. It's just a short link version, /organicpetition.
Okay.
And we don't make any money from this. We don't collect emails. It's change.org. They basically do everything. And we're having it so that as soon as you sign your name on this petition, it sends an email to Stanford. And it says basically that you better retract that study and you better investigate Ingram or whatever his name is, the big tobacco-linked co-author, because we're not going to stand for it. And if we just sit here and let them pump these studies out, we're not going to win anything. They're just going to do these studies all day long. We need to show and call out the media. And that's really what this is as well. We're calling out the media on this. Are you really going to continue to report this garbage from this statistical liar, admitted statistical liar who worked for a corporation that paid off journalists and organizations upwards of $3 million after adjusting for inflation to report bogus fake information to encourage people to kill themselves from smoking cigarettes? It's the same thing here, and we're calling for a retraction and the mainstream media to acknowledge it and cover it, because we need to stop it here. If this organic study gets through and people start buying conventional and believing it, and the mainstream media, who's calling organic consumers nothing short of cult members and delusional in the New York Times, it's just going to get worse. So we need to stop it here. If we stop this study and basically show the world what the truth is about it, it can end from there. We can go from there. We're also Prop 37. If you can support Prop 37 any way you can, that'll also be instrumental in making sure we label GMOs in California.
Right.
And then that will extend throughout the rest of the country and potentially the world. But the rest of the world, by the way, is already pretty keen to this. I mean, there's multiple countries with labeling and even downright bans on GMOs. Right. United States, of course, is just heavily infiltrated by Monsanto goons in virtually every single department of government.
Well, Anthony, thank you so much for this very illuminating information and for all that you're doing to spearhead the stopping of this and saving our food. Thank you so very much. And we'll make sure we get that link up on InfoWars, too, so people can get to it quicker and we can get those numbers that you want. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So that was Anthony Gucciardi, and his website is Natural Society. Go sign that petition. We really have to stand up together and make a difference. Just not complain about this stuff. It's our food. It's our children. It's our world. We can make a difference. We're not quite done yet. We're going to replay an interview that Alex did with the director of 2016 Obama's America with Dinesh D'Souza.
His film has been in the top three. It is the second highest grossing political documentary of all time, or documentary period, right behind Fahrenheit 9/11. It's already made more than two of Michael Moore's other films combined, $26 million. And it hasn't even hit DVD or Netflix yet. And I'm not going to waste time going over his lengthy bio. Most of you know him. Dinesh D'Souza is the maker and a writer and director, and it's based on his book, 2016 Obama's America, that the system fought to even get in the theaters. I went and saw it, was very impressed with the quality of the production. I disagree with a few things in it, and we'll get into that with Dinesh D'Souza, who joins us until the bottom of the hour. Of course, he worked in the Reagan White House as a world affairs advisor and a policy analyst, and he is a best-selling author and journalist, and he joins us now. Thank you for coming on the show, Dinesh.
It's a great pleasure to be on.
Okay, so, wow, tell us about the huge success of the film and where you're going.
Well, the film has become absolutely huge. It started in the summer as a small film showing initially in a single theater in Houston, Texas. Then it went to four theaters, expanded out to about 100. But it did so well in those 100 theaters that it jumped to 1,000 theaters. It's now in 2,000 theaters. So it's pretty much any American who wants to see the film can find it. And on our website, which is just 2016themovie.com, will allow you to see a trailer and see where it's playing. The film has now become, it just surpassed two of Michael Moore's films, Sicko and Bowling for Columbine, and also Al Gore's film called An Inconvenient Truth. So we are now, remarkably, the second most successful political documentary of all time.
Simply amazing. It shows people are desperate for something than the mainstream pap they're being fed, certainly trailblazing in a big way here. Dinesh, the basic thesis for those that don't know is that what? Obama is a global wealth redistributor?
Yes. You know, many people think that Obama is a wealth redistributor in America, and he is. So when they talk about the 1%, the 99%, they think that Obama means in the United States. But Obama's a global guy. I mean, remember, here's a guy who grew up in part in Indonesia, made multiple trips to Pakistan, to Kenya. And so Obama looks at all this from the world point of view. And I think when he thinks of the 1%, the 99%, he puts all of America in the 1%. And there are 99 hungry nations encircling America, all of whom want America's standard of living, America's wealth, America's power, and so on. So Obama is not just recycling money in the United States. He's also transferring large amounts of wealth from America to the rest of the world.
Dinesh, I want to get into the fact that you're in the news today talking about trying to get your film on television. Break that down. I see Deadline Hollywood reports exclusive 2016 Obama's America filmmaker reacts to President Slam, and he's looking for a network to air before election, says mainstream media refusing coverage. Elaborate on that, Dinesh.
Well, it's been kind of odd that, you know, remember when Michael Moore made his films, this guy was everywhere. He was covered by the networks. He was on all the Sunday shows. He was covered widely in the newspapers and so on. Our film, for a long time, was being ignored by the White House, and lots of mainstream outlets just weren't covering it. They were just pretending like it didn't exist. We're in a political season. This is the most successful political documentary of the year by far, and yet it was getting no coverage at all. So this was peculiar, and I think part of it was there was a sense that this documentary has harmful new information that might cause people to change their mind about Obama. So let's not cover it and let's pretend it doesn't exist. Now the White House has figured out, they're like, this has gotten too big, we can't ignore it, it's everywhere, so they've come out blasting it. But, you know, what a clumsy, inept blast it is, because they're alleging all these errors in the film that are actually, not only are they not errors, but they're easily provable. And so I'm very happy to get into this one-on-one debate with Barack Obama. I know it's a debate that I'm not worried that I'm going to lose.
Now, continuing here with the success of the film, do you think it is having a major bearing on the election, or could it be something that actually causes you know, people to wake up to what Obama's doing and swing the election over to Romney?
Well, the film isn't political in that way. I mean, it's not a film that's sort of a just don't vote for Obama. In fact, it's the bigger issue here is the American dream. And in the film, we contrast two dreams, the American dream and Obama's dream. You know, I'm an immigrant. I grew up in India. And so my dream is the American dream. I believe in a society of merit, a society of in which free markets generate wealth. America is a force for good and for freedom in the world. That's my American dream. Well, Obama has a different dream, and it's the dream from his father. That's the title of his autobiography. And so in the film, we go and find out who was his father. What was his father's dream? And it turns out to be a third world dream, in some ways an anti-American dream. Certainly it's a dream of reducing America's influence in the world, treating America, if you will, as a rogue nation. So in some ways, yeah, it is true that Obama holds these ideas, but they're wider than Obama. They're in fact believed by many people in Riyadh and Jakarta and Rio de Janeiro. It's just that we've never had a president of the United States who holds these views.
Now, we have the maker, the author, the director, you name it, of the new hit documentary, Dinesh D'Souza, 2016 Obama's America, on with us. Here's my issue. I've studied history as you have, and you could undoubtedly say until the 50s and 60s, the United States certainly wasn't perfect, did have a policy to actually try to build up the third world and really empower them and bring them freedom. Since then, perfect example, putting radical jihadists in Libya, putting them in Syria. They've now killed the U.S. ambassador in Libya. And NATO's funding this. This is bigger than just Obama. In your film, you show the Middle East spreading out into, you know, areas of Central Asia, up into Russia, Western Europe, you know, a new jihad, similar to what we saw triggering the Crusades. We see this, you know, Islam spreading like Mordor or something in Lord of the Rings, a similar map. But then we're told that's what Obama wants. Well, wait a minute. I mean, the big mega banks funding Obama, the same ones that are funding Mitt Romney to Daesh, they are the ones going with this policy. So my issue is this is a lot bigger than Obama.
Well, it is bigger than Obama, I agree. And, you know, in some ways, we've got to be fair. Obama didn't cause the Arab Spring. There was a revolt within the Arab world. My criticism of Obama is the way that he's reacting or responding to it. I mean, look, there's a power struggle going on in Egypt right now. It's between the military and between the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is the largest organization of radical Islam in the world. So whose side is Obama on? He's on the side of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Obama administration has been warning the Egyptian military, you guys better turn over power or we're going to cut off U.S. aid. Now, wow, here's the United States. We had in Egypt an ally, Mubarak, a dictator to be sure, but a dictator friendly to Israel, friendly to the United States. We helped to push him out, and now we're accelerating a transition of power so that our own deadly enemies, the radical Muslims, get a hold of a major country. Look, the radical Muslims already control Iran. If they now control Egypt, there's only one other big country left for them to take over, and that's Saudi Arabia. So that's where the film goes. It says, wait a minute, you know, if Saudi Arabia falls, then all the major legs of the tripod are now in place, and all the smaller countries, Jordan, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and so on, they're never going to be able to hold out against a tide of radical Islam sweeping the region. So, you know, so what's going on with Obama? I mean, some people think Obama's a bungler. He doesn't know what he's doing, and so on. I say no. I think Obama knows what's happening. It's very predictable. It's happening right in front of our eyes. But Obama is trying to reduce U.S. influence in the region. And part of that is to weaken our allies and allow some of the bad guys to come to power.
Well, Dinesh, let me ask you this question. I mean, clearly, a lot of Obama's family has CIA ties and connections. When we hear that, you know, he's a radical Muslim who wants to overthrow us, I mean, I think that is just propaganda. I know you're not saying that. You're saying he's kind of a world citizen, a globalist. He wants to diminish American power. I agree. But not to give it to the Muslims. They're just going to use those guys, the radical Muslims, to destabilize. This is more of a British great game, speaking of colonialism. And I see the mega corporations that brag that they've conquered Europe through derivatives fraud and conquered us. I mean, I can play the clips of CNBC saying that the world's been conquered by private banks who aren't free market. And I see them always waging war against sovereignty and actually the old colonialism. So I see Obama not even as anti-colonialist. He is siding with globalism that is a modern corporate colonialism that actually teams up with the third world, not to empower them, but to leverage out the first world. Look at the example of the globalist teaming up with China. Now, I mean, I know that's a complex issue, but I know you know what I'm talking about.
Well, I do think that there is an alliance between a guy like Obama. Now, take a guy like George Soros, who has his own global agenda. Soros and Obama, in my opinion, are not coming from the same place. Soros has a European disdain for America. He uses financial leverage. I think he would love to try to pull America down. Obama has a third world ideology. This is the anti-colonial part. So Obama and Soros are coming from different places, but in a way they have a common project. And the common project is to level down the power of the United States.
Well, that's actually true, then. I mean, what you're saying is true. Well, sure. I mean, Soros openly says he's wanted to kill the dollar forever. He's wanted to get rid of our liberties forever. He is an admitted, you know, as a young man, a Nazi helper and sympathizer. How is this monster allowed to operate inside of our country and run groups like Media Matters, whose memos have come out, wanting to destroy alternative media? These are authoritarians. So how did the power structure, who's not far from perfect, but how did they let somebody like Obama get in who does want to destroy our sovereignty, who would pay $22 billion to ship General Motors, Volt and Cadillac factories, Dinesh, to China? I mean, he really does want to destroy this country.
I think he wants to downsize it. I mean, I would stay away from the word destroy myself, but I'm just trying to be as cautious as I can in making the case so that it really sticks and is anchored on the facts. I mean, there's no question Obama will give defense contracts to Brazilians over American companies, which is a very odd thing to do when it comes to defense. Every country wants to have its defense contracts stay within the country, but not apparently Obama. Obama will basically say that American companies that advertise by American are being, quote, discriminatory. And so in trade deals that he makes in the Far East, he says, well, we're going to try to exclude those kinds of companies that are being, quote, discriminatory. Mm-hmm. Discriminatory how? By advertising by American. So, look, this is a very unusual guy that we have in the Oval Office. He's not Bill Clinton. I think we've already figured that out. But he's not even Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter made a lot of mistakes, but he made mistakes because he was a buffoon. He was incompetent. Obama's mistakes aren't like that. It isn't that Obama's getting results opposite to what he intends. He intends the results he's getting.
Dinesh D'Souza, maker of the second biggest political documentary in all time, 26 million grossed in a month. It's going to be in the theaters another month and a half, then go to DVD. Look, I think your film is a masterpiece. I mean, it's cinematically, the style. I'm a filmmaker myself. The Obama Deception is free online for folks that want to watch that. I mean, I was impressed with what you brought to the table, because most political documentaries are at about a fourth grade level. And I'm not insulting your film, but yours is at a eighth grade, 10th grade level. And I guess in media, they say keep it at about a fourth grade level. But I mean, you actually tackle issues of globalism that, well, there's one point in the film, correct me if I'm wrong, where you say and show the evidence that it's not that they want to build up the third world. They want to bring us down to that level. And that's a big deal.
Yeah, with Obama, it's not about building up. I mean, in fact, he rarely even talks that much about the inner city or about the poor. He gets excited when he's pulling down the rich. That's his target. And that's when you begin to see Obama's, his voice rises and he gets animated and so on. So ultimately, this is about leveling down. I agree. And it also, but not just wealth, he's also leveling American power. I think he doesn't like a world in which one country, America, is the sole superpower. He'd like to see Russia come up, China come up, India come up, Brazil come up. He wants to see a multipolar world in which there are many countries sharing power. And by the way, many countries that have a roughly equal number of nuclear weapons. That's why he's spending less time trying to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear bomb and more time trying to slash the American nuclear arsenal.
Let me say this to you. I mean, obviously, you've worked inside the Republican White House of Ronald Reagan. I think it's fair to say you're a Republican operative.
No, that's not fair to say. I mean, I worked in the Reagan White House in my mid-20s. I mean, I'm 51 years old and the president of a college, so I just want to say I'm a conservative, but I mean, I have nothing to do with Romney or the RNC. I'm not.
Okay, well, then now that you've said that, I respect that. And again, I haven't gone over your LinkedIn bio because of the time, but you're obviously a scholar as well. Here's the bottom line. Romney is the worst Republican I have ever seen. Obviously, I don't have to list everything. When he was actually a governor, abortion, open borders, restrictions of guns, carbon taxes, wrote the Obama plan. I mean, all of this. My issue is that I want Obama out of there. I don't want him to not be facing re-election. I mean, even if Romney's going to be bad, at least he'll be facing re-election. So I am saying, okay, I see people that want to support Romney. My issue is this. What will you do if Romney gets in and continues what some of these monopoly capitalists want that have been financing Obama, who want tyranny, not liberty, who don't want a free market? What are you going to do to Mitt Romney if he gets in and continues what Obama's been doing?
Hey, listen, don't give me any ideas. I may have to make another film. But look, I don't know about Romney. As you know, we don't mention Romney in the film. This really is a referendum. I think this election is a referendum on Obama. If I had to say what this election is about, I'd even say it's about Obama versus Obama, right? There's the celluloid Obama, the mythical Obama that was put out in 2008, the unifier, the healer, the centrist. I claim that Obama does not exist. And then there's the real Obama, the guy in the White House, the guy guy who can't change, the guy who can't move to the center, the guy who has been affirmed in his mind by a combination of radicals, revolutionaries, in one case a former communist and domestic terrorist, Bill Ayers. I mean, these were his buddies. These are the guys. This is the real Obama. So it's a matter of, does America want
to... Wow. So you're saying all the communist pornographers and weirdos that he lived with and was associated with, you're saying that wasn't just his foundation cover as a leftist. You're saying he really is a real globalist, Marxist-Leninist, deindustrializing crazy man.
Well, here's what I'm saying. If Frank Marshall Davis was introduced to him by his grandfather. So, all right, I'll say that was somebody that his grandfather brought him in front of, and he was only 10 years old when he met Frank Marshall Davis. But every other guy, the Palestinian radical Edward Said, the Brazilian socialist Unger at Harvard Law School, Bill Ayers, the incendiary preacher Jeremiah Wright. I mean, Obama didn't bump into these guys. He sought them out.
I understand.
Because he wanted to hang around radical, revolutionary guys who he imagined to be surrogate fathers, kind of like his real dad who wasn't around.
Let me raise this in the 5 minutes we've got left with Dinesh D'Souza here, the maker of 2016 Obama's America, which is an amazing film. Dinesh, looking at this then, if he's as bad as you say, and I think the evidence is there, Fast and Furious, a false flag against the Second Amendment, the list goes on and on. We've got all these Obama advisors in the Financial Times of London, you name it, saying, don't worry if he's down in the polls. There'll be an event we're going to blame on their enemies. They don't say they're going to stage it, but they imply, don't worry, something's coming. I'm sure you've seen that in the news because it's been pushed for 2 years. Are you concerned he could pull an October surprise?
Not so much. He could, and that's a possibility. What I really do in the film and my work is I say, I don't even need to go there. I don't even need to speculate about what he could do. I'm just going to look at what he has done, and I'm going to extrapolate out to what happens if he just keeps doing that over the next 4 years. So he's added $5 trillion in debt. Let's say he adds another $5 trillion, a very cautious and reasonable estimate. Then America will be $20 trillion in debt, and $10 trillion of that would have been added by one man, Obama. And then I said, wait a minute, why would one guy want to do that? Why would someone want to saddle his country with almost unrepayable debt? And then I offer a theory. I said, well, maybe he sees debt as a way to settle America's colonial debt. It's kind of like we owe the rest of the world. I can't get a foreign aid program passed that would transfer trillions of dollars in wealth, but I can achieve the same effect because if our children and grandchildren have to pay back all this debt and some of that debt is to Kuwaitis and to Saudis and to Chinese, well, that's another way to transfer large trillions of dollars outside the United States to all these other countries.
But, again, I go back to the issue. Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, I mean, you look at the list of people that are not just supporting Obama, they supported all of his policies. They are financing everything he wants. I'm saying these globalists, we need conservatives and libertarians to recognize that there are two different groups of capitalists. There are the free market capitalists. There are the monopoly capitalists who want tyranny, who don't want freedom, who don't want us to have choice, who are working through big government types like Obama to convert us to an authoritarian system. That's all I'm saying is that all this corruption and globalism didn't just start with Obama.
Yes, I agree with that. And even as I mentioned debt, you're well aware, I'm well aware, that Reagan added $200 billion a year in debt. Bush, of course, was a big spender. Bush's largest deficit was $500 trillion. But again, keep things in perspective. Obama's smallest deficit is more than double that. It's $1 trillion. I think what Obama's done is just lift things to a sort of complete and unacceptable new level.
I hear you. It just makes me so upset to see this country and the TSA sticking their hands down our pants looking for bin Laden while NATO and our own government is putting Al-Qaeda in as the main shock force in Libya and Syria. It's so scary to see what both parties have become, the torture, the secret arrest, the wars, all of it. And I cover all that in the Obama deception. I made it 3.5 years ago. It's all come true, unfortunately. Dinesh, have you seen the Obama deception?
I have not. I would actually like to very much.
All right. Well, we're going to go to break here, and I'll I'll talk to you as we go to break and as you leave us, and then I'll find a P.O. box or something to send the film to you. Because, I mean, I get it. Obama's really bad, but I think he's a manifestation of how far along this globalist line we've gotten. Do you think Obama, in closing, may backfire on the establishment and may cause a pendulum swing back towards liberty?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I hope that people are using this sort of intense interest in politics that will be generated this year to think about what's happened to the American dream. And, you know, is this American era, which began in 1945?
Obama is notoriously a liar.
We need to go to where the real architecture of government is, and it's not in a president.
Wall Street has hijacked Washington in broad daylight.
Well, Obama's already fudging. He's fudged since day one in this election.
The elite are using Obama to pacify the public so they can usher in the North American Union by stealth, launch a new Cold War, and continue the occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan.
The globalists are outside all the nations. That gives them safety, and they play countries off against each other.
We've got to give them a stake in creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
Partnership and cooperation among nations is not a choice. It is the only way.
What they're doing is using the existence of the United States to act out their Wall Street fantasies of world domination and maintaining their capital structures and maintaining their system of looting.
The fight that this country has been waging since its inception is for the central bankers not to take over the country.
President Barack Obama is only the tool of a larger agenda.
Senator Obama had a desire to do some meetings. Others had a desire to meet with him tonight in a private way, and that's what we're doing.
Presidential candidate Barack Obama was publicly criticizing the North American Free Trade Agreement in a bid for votes, but privately telling Canadian officials not to worry about it.
If you talk to our generals, they are desperate for is a civilian counterpart to our military force.
What do you call this thing where you get this false sense of gratification, but because a black man is in office, everything's going to be all right? No, everything's not going to be all right.
So I know how unpopular it is to be seen as helping banks right now, especially when everyone is suffering in part from their bad decisions. I promise you, I get it.
The Obama deception. The truth strikes back. Get your copy of The Obama Deception today at InfoWars.com or download it in super high quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.